Good evening and welcome to Key Life Transits, class from Planet Waves. I'm Eric, and thank you for signing up and joining us this evening and for being the latest cohort of astrology students in the world. And I'd be happy to do what I can to set you a little bit further on that particular journey. A couple of things. I would encourage your participation and your questions. And the way that you do that is to raise your hand by dialing *2. I'm trying to figure out how to unraise hands. All right. So I think you just click on it, and once that session is cleared, it goes away. So *2. And then when I get to a convenient breaking point between breaths, I will call on you. I am recording on my end, and then the seminar system is recording on its end. It'll take me a little while, like an hour or two, to get the recording up. The one from the one I'm recording in my studio is going to sound better. So I want to begin with a few opening thoughts about astrology and studying astrology. One thing we get with astrology is a tool to help us navigate through space and time and experience. Sometimes it really feels like you're using a navigational tool. So if you can almost feel the ship rocking, and you're pointing the sextant up at the sky. Only the sky you're pointing at is a kind of an inner reality where you're making choices and trying to discern the meaning of experiences, and then if you choose to branch out, helping others do the same thing. And this basically is what time is for learning and being who we are and creating who we are. And astrology can help with all of those things, and it can also be used in a way that is limiting. And I would encourage you fairly early on to keep a keen ear out for statements by astrologers that open the way forward and ones that seem to block the way forward. Statements that give you an opportunity to see your options and make a choice versus statements of astrologers that encourage you to block your options and feel like you can't make a choice. And the better you can discern those, the more likely it is that you will be the first kind of astrologer who helps people see their options and make decisions. The time that we are in is one that on one level is very much suited to the use of astrology because there is so much chaos, and astrology is a complex enough system that it can embrace that chaos in an elegant way. But I want to just say at the outset that it takes a lot of time and patience and study and reflection and reading and seeking self-understanding to be an astrologer. And in today's world, the study of astrology is archaic, not because of the subject matter, which can be brilliantly modern and take up all kinds of contemporary issues and use planets discovered last week, but because the attention required is so different from the way that we devote our attention in the world these days. There is so much on-the-go thinking and so much hurried behavior and lack of reflection and lack of interest in details and listening has become a special thing. And we are very quickly becoming accustomed to getting a result by tapping on an icon on a piece of glass rather than by doing something that takes extended years of work, patience, reflection, experience, inner experience, matching all those things up, and that does not necessarily come with immediate rewards for the effort that seems to be exerted. And so if you're not ready to do that for 5 or 10 years, and look, I'm not saying it's going to take that long, but it takes 10 years of consistent study at minimum to master something. If you're not ready to make a commitment to the inner process and the patience that it takes, and the reading and the reflection, and you know, for example, taking what you learned today and working with it in real life with yourself and others. Astrology can be a very frustrating thing to be involved with. And so I would just urge some caution there and encourage you to bring the resources of your patience and your reflectiveness and your willingness to have truth and meaning be subtle things and not be high relief, definitive things that we're falsely told that they are. So just to repeat, it's not easy to learn astrology or to learn to practice astrology. It cannot be reduced to formulas and techniques. Even though there might be some formulas and techniques, you can't reduce it to those things. And I think the single most important thing to recognize is that every situation and every person and every situation that they are in is distinct and unique in the true sense of the word unique. Astrology deals in a lot of single cases, things that can never happen again, things that won't happen again, things that have never happened before, certainly not to that person. And people are complex, and it takes time to get to know someone and time to understand them even a little, including if you're at the, you know, the intersection of a decision that they're making and you happen to be the person they call upon to help them intervene. You still have a relatively narrow view just based on the limits of being able to peer into another person's mind definitively. It's not really possible. So bear all that in mind. And the part about that that's intended to help you is that if you bring patience to the work, you'll find it more rewarding. And the benefits will be more obvious when you encounter one. And just remember, it's not going to be like a triple espresso. It's not going to have that feeling to it. And you may make discoveries doing a mundane chart that no one actually cares about. You may make discoveries about your own transits that you can't really ever explain to anyone because, unless you're talking to me or another astrologer, and even then. So bear all that in mind. Astrology is not about math or planets or theories. It's about you and people, and people you interrelate with. And it's one tool to help you understand people and life. It provides a flexible framework that you can move around inside of. It offers possible context and ways to frame discussions. And it, I think, provides the basis of questions much more suitably than it does answers. And so if you're looking for answers, it's certainly easy to have false answers from astrology or from any system. The things that just seem palliative, and then you know, you think you've got an answer. But I would go super light on that. There used to be a spiritual tradition of being very gentle on this whole concept of answers and seeking answers. Maybe it was just my camp counselors at Quaker camp or something. I don't, or you know, philosophy professor or music teacher. But we have to go gently on the thing with answers and really learn how to stand in relationship to the unknown. Another one of the most important skills in astrology is to not come to conclusions, to make observations, and to set aside the whole notion of definitive meaning and hold that space where definitive meaning would go, hold it open, and see what finds its way in, and see what finds its way into a conversation where definitive meaning is not the thing that the conversation is driving toward. As an astrologer, if you're working with other people, much of what you're going to do is help people make decisions, which I think is mostly about helping people formulate questions and see possible options and leave the choosing to them and the assigning of meaning to them, and like a good therapist, be able to stand back far enough to give people room to be able to see their life and to see their possibilities and to make their choices. So this class is about key life transits, which are basically signposts and what you can think of as mile markers along the journey of existence. Now, we're used to seeing these mile markers on the highway, like, you know, you're driving toward Chicago. It's like Chicago 120, and then you put a CD on or whatever, an iPhone, iPod, whatever, and then, you know, Chicago is 60 and so on. Mile markers meant more when you were traveling on foot and on horseback. There are some... There's a little teeny state park in my neighborhood called the Senate House, and they have a couple of very old mile markers, of which there must have been hundreds, pointing the way into Kingston. And looking at those old mile markers, it's really possible to see what it means when the marker says that the Kingston is 5 miles away, which for us is like, you know, nothing, right, these days. But on foot, on horseback, that was a day's journey. And we need these mile markers because life has a way of lacking enough distinction in the landscape to be able to, you know, often differentiate one time from another, to differentiate one phase of one's life from another, to mark achievements. We do so little of this in life. And so part of what we're doing with key life transits is, in a sense, a study in developmental, not necessarily psychology, but there's a little bit of that, more like developmental spirituality. But it's also just about the process of recognizing a series of initiations that we go through. And if you look at what people are going through and you take these initiations gently for yourself and then recognizing them in others, you'll be able to notice things. You know, you might start to notice the Saturn cycle if you have the opportunity to hang around with kids who are, say, for example, between like 6 and 15 years old. You might notice that there are distinctions around age 7 and around age 14 that represent those quadrature alignments of Saturn, just to give one example. And the other thing to remember is that, you know, everyone is different. And so when we talk about key life transits, we're talking about transits that happen to people of a similar cohort at a similar time in life. Right, so, you know, with Chiron transits, for example, people born in 19, 94 are going to start to have their Chiron square in about 2000. But they're all different. So it's similar age groups and similar transits at similar times of life, which will have something in common, and then, you know, not. It's kind of like cats. They're all the same, and they're all different. So that's how you have to treat these transits and look for the common ground, but make sure that that people have enough, you leave people room to not get boxed into any ideas you might have about them. Transits are about the direct experience of astrology. This cannot be emphasized enough. The experiences we have, the developments, the changes are all coming through transits. And while most astrology begins with a study of the natal chart, the natal chart starts to come into focus when you start to see the way that the natal placements behave under the emphasis of transits. So, for example, if a person has Saturn in the ascendant, and you're wondering what that's about, you will learn something when a planet crosses that ascendant and makes a conjunction to Saturn, whatever planet it might be. And so one of the things you're doing is you're going to be observant of experiences. So one of the things I'm doing without even really, letting on what I'm doing is I don't usually travel through life asking people what their sign is. I'm much more likely to ask people what they were doing at age 29, just because I'm infinitely curious about different manifestations of the Saturn return. And so I don't identify that all the time. I just might casually ask. If someone's telling me their life story, I might just drop the question in. And so you'll see that there are similar kinds of developments and similar ways that people handle and mishandle those developments given certain age groups. Now, it's worth noting that we are in a very serious maturity crisis in our culture right now, where people are still considered kids at age 30, people are still living at home at age 30. I mean, in the 1960s and 70s, when most of us were younger, 1980s, that was just ridiculous. You just would leave. You don't want to hang out. And now the helicopter parenting has in some ways become helicopter childrening, and a lot of this has to do with the student loan burden that young people carry, and on the one hand, and the cost of housing, and on the other hand, parents often find it comforting to have their kids at home. And so what we've got, particularly in American culture right now, is a maturity crisis where, people are still wondering what they're going to do in their 30s. And I get that. I mean, I just got off the phone with, someone who's, 45 and is making up her mind about her vocation, right, at age 45. So that's always going to happen, right? There's always decision points and things like that. But what we're doing in our culture is, I think, we are artificially suppressing maturity for a wide number of reasons, with a wide number of factors involved, including economic factors, emotional factors, spiritual factors, fear, the impact of the internet. And so what we've got is a kind of a widespread case of arrested development in our culture. And part of what you're doing as an astrologer is helping people claim the rung on the ladder where they are, and orient them on where they are in life based on a loose developmental theory that you'll make after you have read enough and studied your transits carefully enough, and then studied people close to you carefully enough, and then worked with 10 clients and 100 clients. And to this end, I suggest that you, anytime you have someone willing to let you look at their chart, who asks you to look at their chart, that you not only analyze the natal placements, but that you find out about several of their transits. You'll be able to see them without much fuss. And if you can't, you look them up and begin the process of collecting people's accounts of their transits as much as you possibly can. I get that it seems advanced as opposed to just looking at the natal chart, but I would propose that maybe the other way around, that working with transits is it's a little more formulaic, because you know when Chiron is going to make a conjunction to their Saturn, right? Anybody with Chiron, with Saturn and Aries, early Aries right now, is having Chiron conjunct Saturn. It's easy to see that and to inquire about the person's experience, and you can see easily see, without much in the way of resources, key life transits, going back to a fairly young age. And I think this is one of the most important ways to learn how to do natal astrology, and also, of course, the real work of astrology happens with transits. So take any opportunity you have, even if you're only working with them for 15 minutes at a psychic fair. Look at one transit, right? Ask about one transit and find out, something about how they got to in front of you, like what they're doing there. Now, I'm very much encouraging of astrology being handled minimally and gently, which I don't mean don't be knowledgeable. It's more in the application of astrology, and it is necessary to take a holistic view of people's lives, and to use the time you have with them to find out as much about them as you can by means other than astrology. Even if you're only using the astrology as a prompt in some way, or a probe, where were you at, 5 years ago? Excuse me, my voice is getting a little bit froggy. Where were you at 5 years ago when this transit was happening? But also listen to what they're saying and the kinds of words they use and the things that they tell you about themselves. We're past the point, there's been a kind of a reversal of the role, but we're past the point when an astrologer can even vaguely be expected to know everything about a person from their chart. I just don't think that that's ethical, and I haven't seen it work very well either. I mean, that's also deeply problematic, that it's just not. You can make true statements, and it's also possible to make untrue statements sound convincing, and to tap into people's self-doubt and all that. And I would suggest relying on as many methods of getting to know a person as you can, remembering that this is all taking place in the realm of a conversation. with key life transits and other elements of astrology, I think that these tools are better as probes than as making a tool for making a prediction or a definitive statement. So by probe, I mean a gentle query into someone's experience or state of mind. And transits of any kind, key life or specific to a person, Pluto conjunct Venus or whatever, are very helpful ways to make gentle queries into someone's experience. And as you do this, you will start to peel back the layers of the natal chart. So, for example, even 3-4 years into my work, I was working with people on a kind of an interview about their transits for a 90-minute session before I would do any other work with them. And you don't need to be an expert at transits to do this. You only need to be able to spot the timing of the transits and have good bedside manner and be able to just gently query them about what their life was about at that time. If you've taken my Chiron classes, they like to start with their address, because the address is a kind of a neutral prompt, because it's descriptive of a place and time, but not of specific events. And to take it really gently, I learned how to read natal charts from querying people about their Chiron transits, and I did not feel a need to make any statements about what the chart or the transits meant. All I did was go from very gently from event to event, and be receptive and let people explain their life at that time. And you know, you can use almost any outer planet events for this kind of thing. All right, so let's see. I'm working from notes here, which I don't usually do, but I want to be a little bit more methodical. We always begin astrology by studying our own chart, and I would encourage you to take what you learn in this class and build an inventory of your own transit events so that you have a, first of all, a chronology, and then second, a way to reflect on your transit events so that you have a sense of your own development as it is described by astrology. So in navigating space and time, we're talking about also navigating a development process. And the development process involves inner changes, relationships, movements, outer changes, and other events that that everyone is in a relationship with. And as you study your past transits, you can see the way in which you respond to events. You can see the underlying material, you know, bubbling up out of the deeper layers of your chart, and you get plenty of food for thought, and you don't want to come to distinct conclusions about these transits, but rather observe them over time. I'll say again that to study astrology and to really train well, as an astrologer, you must be able to stand in relationship to the unknown, to be able to allow the mystery to be open and not rush to solve the mystery, because often the rush to solve the mystery will yield a false information, will yield a false conclusion, and that's not the point. The point is, you know, to hold the story open, to not drive things. I mean, an example of this is I would in the past do my transit interviews on the phone or in person, usually on the phone. People from all over the world calling me up. And in the course of doing those, sometimes somebody would draw a complete blank on a time frame. Now, this was before I was using the address, but I would just, you know, ask them about some period of time in their life, and they wouldn't be able to remember anything. And almost every time that happened, I would get a call or an email 3 days later. Oh my God, I can't believe I didn't remember that. It was one of the biggest, biggest events of my life at that time. And so this is an example of why you want to hold the mystery open and stand in a conscious and respectful relationship to the unknown, particularly because it's often, once you're working with people, it's going to be the unknown about other people. And to do this work, which requires a lot of mediating between the conscious and unconscious minds, the archetypal realm and the normal waking consciousness realm and all these things, you have to have tremendous respect for the process of people's, the way that they formulate their ideas and the way they formulate their observations about themselves. Now, one last thought on working with others, and then I'll take. We have one hand up, and then we'll have a good opportunity to talk about some of this. So, if you've got a thought you want to share or question about it, please enter star two, so you can contribute to the conversation. And I've got plenty to say, but I want to work with your ideas. In understanding why you want to work with other people, that is worth a good think through. And there's a couple of reasons. One might be that you know that you need to work with other people to some degree to learn astrology. Another might be that you want to be helpful in some way, which is always an instinct to be a little bit cautious of. And you also might want to do this as a vocation, as a calling, and it helps to just really be in contact with your motive so that you're not overstepping on anyone, and so that you remain respectful of the growth processes of others. This work, when done well, is done with a very light hand. There may be times when you have to be a little more assertive in saying something, where you have this feeling that you're the only person who can actually say this to someone, but it should then be done with very little attachment to the outcome, and trust that your inner source has guided you correctly. And one last thought is that I recognize that everyone's on a somewhat different level here, and the thing that you do when you're relatively new at this and you can't do, you can't necessarily spot the transits quickly or find out when they're going to be quickly or easily, that the thing to do is take your time. Is to, you know, let's say you open up a natal chart with someone and you might give them three dates to look at that you looked up in the ephemeris. And then let the conversation unfold slowly, more like homeopathic remedy works and less like antibiotics work, right? Antibiotics, you're sick one day and you take the antibiotics and you expect to be better the next morning or to feel better anyway, right? Because you can imagine your blood level rising and then by like day three, you've peaked out on the blood level and you might be symptom free, et cetera, et cetera. Homeopathy is, in a way, the opposite. You may take the homeopathic remedy and feel worse for a week. And you may feel worse and have unusual dreams that you make note of. You may feel worse, have unusual dreams, and also make observations about yourself. And so I think that homeopathy is a valid parallel to astrology in that it is working with who a person inherently is, and that in a sense, by having their chart open, you are refining certain elements of who they are and giving them back to them in very modest doses, and then they have a kind of a response in some way. Wide diversity of responses possible, but some kind of a response. All right, I believe Max has his hand up, and I would please encourage those with thoughts, ideas, or who want clarification, or if you have something to add, to please get into the conversation. Let's see. Max in Valencia. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep. Do you have a question or thought?
Okay, great.
You had your hand up. Did you want to participate, or was that just a button error?
Yeah, I have a question. So I want to know, I'm going to be 3 years old in July. 10 years ago, on February 20th, 2010, I was 13 years old, and I collapsed unconscious, and I had a near-death experience where I was rushed to the hospital, and I had to get 7 blood transfusions because I had many ulcers in my stomach that basically I lost almost half my blood, and thankfully I recovered from that a year later, and I wanted to know if there were any, you know, what key transits were happening at that time for me.
Well, do you know the day? I mean, how proficient are you at reading charts? You know, can do you know your chart? Do you read your own
chart? I know my chart pretty well.
All right, so what I would do?
Yeah, I do. I read my own chart, and yeah.
So if you walked in and wanted to talk about that, the first thing I would do would be to cast a chart for the day you got sick and see what was going on at all. Right, so you know that day is probably recorded, right? Someone probably knows what day you had that event, right?
Yeah, it was February 20th, 2010.
Right. So it's a little outside the scope of this class to look at that, but who knows? So 2/20/10, and do you mind announcing your natal data to the class? Do you mind if everyone knows your birth date? Max?
Hello, can you hear me? Sorry, got cut off there. My natal date is July 25, 1996. July.
Right, and what time?
10:30 p.m. at night.
And where are you born?
Los Angeles, California.
Okay, so. Do you have a time on the event on 2/20/10? Approximate time of day?
It was sometime in the afternoon. It was after 12, definitely.
Okay.
And somewhere in there.
Okay. So
after 12, before 6, for sure.
Okay, so there's a few ways to do that. If you're saying between 12 and 6, we can pick the midpoint of 3 p.m. And while I can't do this while I'm teaching, there are people sitting in their computers right now who can cast this. Where did this medical event happen? Where are you living?
Miami, Florida.
All right, Miami. Okay. So, to answer your question generally, when anyone tells me about any kind of a life-threatening event or near-death experience, I want to get a look at the chart because there's going to be a guidance coming from the chart. Recognizing that's just one point in time, it's one intersection of your transits with your natal chart, and that it has to be treated gently and without coming to conclusions about what it's about, that it can be very helpful in terms of assembling a composite picture. You were 96. How old were you again when that happened? I missed that. That dropped out of the call. Let's see. I should be able to figure it out. If you were born
13, I was 13 years old.
Okay, so. You know, the important question is, what was the before and after moment for you, right? When how was your life different after that experience?
Well, I'll tell you, that was the first time when I collapsed, I was out for 5 minutes, and then when I woke up again, that was the first time I became of what can be known as, Ram Dass calls the witness. It felt like like you're kind of playing a first person video game, and you're the person operating the computer, so to speak.
Where you're sort of out of yourself, observing yourself?
Yes. Yes.
Let me repeat the data.
I'd never been aware of that feeling before.
Ah, so that's the one time you had that experience, or at least the first time up till then? Okay, let me repeat the natal data, which is July 25, 1996, at 10:30 p.m. in Los Angeles. And the medical
That's
event,
right, yeah.
And the medical event, we know the date is 2/20/10. And we're using 3 p.m. since that's the midpoint of the between noon and 6 p.m. Time frame. Now, I wasn't planning on doing this, but let's take a look at this because there's often an intersection. We know that around age 13, 14 is Saturn opposition, but let's see how close that is. February 20, 2010. 3 p.m., Miami. All right. Okay. So straight away, without even looking at any charts, the Saturn opposition comes to mind. You're born with your natal Saturn in Aries, and at the time of this event, you were right in your Saturn opposition. And so without quite saying...
Okay.
Right, I mean, right, because Saturn's at 3, Libra, 25, it was 4, 4 degrees separated, but that whole frame of 13 to 14 is the Saturn opposition. And if anyone who's cast a chart will see that this was Saturn opposition compounded by a square... from Pluto. So when looking at events in contrast to astrology, the first thing I'm looking for is not the meaning, but whether the event is in some way descriptive, whether it just passes the smell test, whether that looks like, whether the chart of a school bus rolling over looks at all like a school bus rolling over, or whether... I haven't cast the chart for the helicopter crash in Manhattan today. But the first thing I'm going to look for is, does the crash of the helicopter match the chart in any way, right? So that's not about piling the meaning onto it. I'm more curious about the meaning coming from you. And this may take discipline for an astrologer to not tell the client what they think it means, but... this is a profound event in your life. Half your blood? I mean, really? Before and after, what can you tell us about that?
Well, that's my livelihood and what I do for a living and who I am.
What, I missed that. What is
I play the piano.
Ah, okay.
And... So I'm a musician. I'm a pianist. I'm a jazz. I play mainly jazz music, and I'm a composer. I have been doing that for since I was 11 years old.
Right.
And when I first started at the age of 11, I started taking piano lessons, but I wasn't very serious. I would only practice maybe 10 minutes before my lesson every week. And I was I wasn't even sure if I wanted to do music in my life, like as a career. So I, I thought about giving up. And then, fast forward to 13, that's kind of, sorry, let me give you a little more backstory. I've always had very, I've troubles and rocky relationship with my father, my mother, and she raised me single-handedly in a foreign country in Stockholm, Sweden. She's American. She had to learn to speak Swedish and all these things. My father is unfortunately, not a nice person. He has very narcissistic tendencies and, so all of these things were happening during the course of my life and have continued to happen. And by the time I was 13, that event took place. Now, after that happened, I think it was about a few months, not even a year, I started to see significant changes. One was that I discovered jazz music, and I discovered a passion for playing jazz and improvisation. And I started practicing hours every day, 6 to 10 hours almost every day. And if I wasn't playing the piano, improvising, I would be listening to the music and trying to figure it out, to the point where my mom would say, you know, Max, it's time to go to sleep. Don't you want to go see a movie or something? And all I wanted to do was play. So I went from initially, before the event, this, you know, that's one difference that I can tell you that I've noticed, is that I became more more passionate and more involved with the piano, and that I wanted to pursue something that I think I didn't have previously. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, so
forgive me for the long answer.
For our purposes right now, that's quite adequate in that. Saturn is about vocation and calling and maturity and discipline. And what you're saying is that after this event, you took a more mature, disciplined approach to a vocational calling, right? That's almost all you need to know. And you can add that it took something fairly extreme, like a near-death experience, to wake you up at what would seem to be the perfect age for that. Let's hold that thought. I'm going to open up the line to C. Goldman. What is your first name?
Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi.
Hi. Did you want to add something about Max, or do you have your own thought?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I mean, it just
Either way.
It made sense to me what you were saying about the music and everything. I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt his. I thought you were opening up for another. No, I'm really loving the way you're describing how to work with these kind of things. So I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt his.
No, we're good. I think we got the point of magnificently the point, right? Because,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yep.
This event happened, and it's one of those things that's going to be a before or after moment. So I don't feel like I'm burdening the client by saying, so tell me about this from a before and after standpoint, right? That's leaving a lot of room for Max to talk about his experience, and we're tracking a Saturn transit without putting a load onto it, right? We're not saying, oh, you had that near-death experience and you had to have something happen about your vocational calling. That does not follow logically. But when he says what happened and he connects it to becoming more mature and taking up his calling, then it makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? But you notice I haven't put anything on. Tell me if this is true, Max, that you didn't bring into the conversation. I made no attempt to interpret this event. I just guided you to interpret it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Wow.
This is much more productive for everyone, and it is safer. Right? You can't be wrong. You're just telling me what happened to you. So that's it. You're right because you're telling me what happened, and I'm right just because I'm just listening and paying attention. And we now have a thing obvious about Saturn that we can add to our Saturn file, which is to be observant of vocational experiences during Saturn transits. That includes vocational, parental. You talked about your parents, right? You just without completely unprompted, we learned about your parents. And you basically met all the themes of a Saturn transit without any need for anyone to say what a Saturn transit was about. We just know that one happened. And so you can take this approach, those of you listening, can take this approach with any transit. This very light touch approach to leave people the room to unfold themselves. Now, I will send around, we'll post Max's data and, you know, the chart and the event chart, if that's okay with you, Max. And there will be lots that comes out of that.
Yeah.
But we don't want to say too much, right? I'm more curious about, for example, the last year of your life when, incidentally, Chiron was crossing your ascendant. When did you land in Valencia?
January 1st, 2019.
Ah, okay. So, just tracking that, you arrived in Valencia with Chiron conjunct your ascendant. Right, not necessarily a key life transit because anybody can be 28 Pisces or 27 and a half Pisces rising, but of note, you arrived in Valencia with Chiron conjunct your ascendant. It's just interesting. You're in a, that to me says you're in a new reality. Whatever that means, this you're using the transit as a transporting moment.
Oh yeah. Oh right. Totally. It totally feels like it totally feels like.
So, you know, so that's
new,
that's,
country, new everything.
Yeah, and that's a vital sign. You know, the I start to get nervous when I'm interviewing people about their transits and nothing happens. They just don't, you know, you could push a pin in them and nothing would happen. And when someone's a bit tuned in with their experience, they're going to have movements around their transits. There's going to be just be developments. Then you get to be kind of a good Gestalt therapist and kind of size up what those developments hint at, might mean, or, you know, with, again, without being heavy-handed. But you, at least in two examples, experience real movement when the planets are moving in your chart. Now, I think this example makes it easier to see why. It helps to learn transits and natal at the same time, right? I haven't even actually thought about what your natal chart means. I've been looking at it for 10 minutes. It hasn't even occurred to me to interpret your natal chart. You may think that's impossible, but I'm telling you, now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, all right, fifth house sun or something. But really, I'm using the chart just as a kind of a calendar. Right. The only information I really got from your chart was Saturn opposed your Saturn at that age. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. And then Chiron passed through your ascendant at that time, at that point of decision. No interpretation. So this is, you know, when I wrote in Astrology Revealed, if you want meaning, don't look for it, which is one of those probably horrible Sam Cones. Like, if you want a relationship, don't look for it. If you want whatever, don't look for it. But with astrology, the astrology is eager to demonstrate itself. You just have to give it room to do it. All right. So let's keep the line open, Max. And Carolyn, what's on your mind?
Well, currently I have I've had a lot of intense transits for the last 3 years. But the one that I'm interested in right now that I've just been definitely experiencing and looking at is transiting Chiron opposing to the degree my natal Chiron. My natal Chiron, Moon, and Neptune, and Jupiter in the seventh house. Right. And I don't want to go on too much of my chart because I have Pluto opposition too to my Saturn and you know, Saturn opposition. Saturns have all that going on. And I'm embracing, doing my best to embrace that. And I don't want to go on about how I've been experiencing. I've had a lot of stuff moving through my body,
right,
that I've needed to clear. You know, but let's see.
Can you focus the question so we can stay on topic?
Say, but, you know,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Can I jump in a little bit?
No, I just...
Wait, do you want to finish your statement or...
No, I just wondered about the Chiron opposition.
Okay. So,
I have more information, but you don't need...
Chiron cycle, I would suggest working with the whole cycle, not the one event. So I would suggest, since you can read transits, go back and look at, you're at your second Chiron opposition, right?
Yes.
So the first thing I would suggest you do is look up all of your major Chiron transits, all the quad alignments, the first square, first opposition, second square, return, and journal those out.
Okay.
So that you have a sense of what your particular Chiron journey is about. So
that's been the hard thing, because I've had one thing after another, so I haven't timed things or not that good with going back, because it's been major things all along, pretty much.
Yeah, well...
I don't know if I...
It still helps to do what you can to build a chronology. What I have found, I mean, you mentioned Neptune. It's a little bit Neptune-y, right? Not knowing when things happened. But one thing I've noticed with the chronology-resistant...
Pisces, right.
The chronology-resistant clients is that to make the chronology is very helpful.
Okay. All right.
So start with your Chiron quads. By quads, I mean conjunctions, oppositions, and squares. And then add to that Chiron on the ascendant, Chiron on the seventh, Chiron sun, Chiron moon. When you're done with that, conjunctions to the sun and the moon, you're going to end up with about 15 transits. We can provide you the ephemeris, or you can, there's lots of ephemerides to use. Look up the dates and make a notebook. And this goes for everyone. This is just very basic bread and butter self-study. The temple at Delphi had, anyone know what a temple at Delphi said above the entrance? Know thyself. And so every astrologer and every astrology student really has an obligation to anyone they're going to talk to about astrology to make sure that they practice the know thyself approach. Hence, using what you've learned in this class, and we're going to look at a little bit, I've got a couple of more philosophical thoughts, so I'm going to just look at the PDF. Write out those transits and get back to us. It's a good topic for the Chiron class, but write them out and we can discuss them on the list. And if you're having trouble looking up the transits, write to one of us when we'll assist you doing that.
I do have a little. I think I have an ephemeris. My ephemeris, I don't think, has Chiron in it.
Yeah, they're on the internet. I'll send one around.
Yeah. Okay.
A Chiron printable ephemeris that you can use. And you're looking for a wide time orb, like a year per transit. All right, I'm going to move on. Thank you both for those insights. And let's see. All right. Everyone's muted except for me. All right. A couple of more thoughts. There are a lot of books about transits. They all make me nervous. The one that makes me the least nervous is Rob Hand, Planets in Transit. It's still helpful. But even that, you know, any commentary is not going to be about the chart that you are looking at. That's the thing with these commentaries, is that They're always, first of all, let's say you have Saturn square Pluto natally, right? And you're having a planet, a transit that's conjunct your Saturn and square your Pluto. That is not written about in a book. So if you're looking at a transits book, you have to look up one transit and then the other transit. Your job as an astrologer is in part to be the point of synthesis. That is why people come to you and don't look up and don't get those readings, right? That you put the credit card in and you get this prefab reading. The problem with those readings is that they can only take the transits one at a time when what people have going on is a compound transit, as in the case of Max, where his Saturn was opposed by natal Saturn, by transiting Saturn, and squared by Pluto. Well, that's actually way over the head of artificial intelligence in any way. And there's way too many combinations for anyone, there's probably millions of combinations for anyone to write them all out. So my second concern about commentaries on transits is they tend to be negatively predictive. My joke about certain books should come with a razor blade is not really a joke. There have been times I've read astrology that it was so depressing. I'm thinking, what the fuck am I reading this for? And where is the wisdom and the insight that would ever be used to help someone? So if you're going to rely on interpretations of transits, be journalistic about it. Just note what they say rather than taking it as, this is what this is about. A lot of astrology presents itself as if it is the truth of the matter. And this is inherently deceptive. Even if it's not overtly deceptive, you want whoever is teaching you astrology to be circumspect. I'm going to look around at this thing. Walk around a little bit. When I'm covering even the most boring or interesting meeting, I want to see the room from every angle in the room. So I will explore the whole room and look at the planning board, whoever is sitting there, from as many viewpoints as possible, and certainly with a person's life, you want to do that. Okay, so I'm assuming everyone has access to the PDF. If you don't, go back and after the class and look at it. But if you do, please open it up. And just take a look at what I've done here. I've tried to make the simplest possible presentation. To make it simpler, I could have moved average person's chart up to 5 after 11 to make it one Aries rising. That would have matched a little bit better, but I didn't do that. So I thought by the time I thought of it, I had already sent around the PDF. But this is just a completely hypothetical chart. 11 a.m. New Year's Day, 1980, just to give a sense of what it looks like to see and time these transits. So the first thing to notice is the planets I circled are the ones where the key life transit cycles, I think, really matter the most. Saturn, out. The planet has to move slowly to qualify for a thing that can be thought of as a key life transit, right? You can use the Jupiter cycle. I haven't gotten much out of the Jupiter cycle. I've looked at that a lot of times. I mean, I'm Pisces and half my friends are Sagittarians. I haven't noticed the Jupiter cycle being that helpful in this particular process. I've noticed the Saturn cycle and then outward from there to be very helpful in the process. So the five points I've circled are Saturn, Chiron, Uranus, Pluto, and Neptune. And then in the next five pages of the PDF, we can look at the cycle. So if we start with the Saturn cycle of a person born in 1980, you can see where they have their quad alignments. So the person's born with Saturn at about 27 of Virgo, and then they have quad alignments in 88-ish. It'll spread out a little bit, or not, 96-ish, 2002, and then the return in 2009. So that's a predictable, easy cycle to work with. And what I find is that Saturn transits are good if you're working with younger people. For example, Max is not that old. He hasn't had that many transits. When you're working with someone who's 50, they've had every possible Chiron transit. They've had every possible Saturn transit, and a whole bunch of Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus transits. So you've got somebody younger, you want to work with, you're more likely to have Saturn and Chiron events. If we go to the next page in the PDF, that's the Uranus page. Saturn, Uranus. Okay, Chiron is next. And I illustrate only the Uranian opposition, which is yet to take place. It takes place in 2024 for this individual. And you want to check the ephemeris for the full span of time. My usual approach is to take 3 to 5 seasons as the time of the transit. To not, there'll be days you can narrow down, but you want to take a wide time orb. Part of why you're doing this is because these transits can take time to show their colors, and also because there's likely to be other planets in the aspect pattern. So if someone has Saturn in Aries and they're having their Saturn return, for example, Saturn in Aries are having their Saturn return, what else is taking a transit in that vicinity? Kim wrote earlier and said, okay, what about multiple transits? How do you handle that? And there's, in almost every case, there will be multiple transits. As we saw with Max, he's having Saturn in opposition, but also Pluto squares Saturn. And then we could find a whole bunch of other things going on also. And what I suggest is that when there's multiple transits going on, that you address that by giving each planet a voice. You're not going to really come to a definitive idea most of the time about what this whole compound transit, which might bring 5 planets in, means. But if you're having a discussion with the client, you can at least invite the planets into the conversation by referencing them, or by being open to hearing about experiences that sound like another transit. So with Max, it wasn't just a maturity event at Saturn opposition. There was a near-death experience. That's the square to Pluto, right? So if that would have been a whole other thing and a whole other person born in another period of time, were the Saturn opposition not additionally compounded by the presence of Pluto? Following that? So Pluto got its voice. The person nearly died. You lose half your blood, for fuck's sake. That's, and came back to life as a jazz pianist. All right, next one. The Chiron cycle. The Chiron cycle moves fairly quickly, and for today's young people, they've had a lot of Chiron transits. Chiron's got a 50-year orbit, but it does half of its transits in 35 years and the other half in 15 years, approximately. When Chiron is at perihelion, it's moving through the signs very quickly. It moves through Libra the most quickly, 18 months, and Aries the most slowly, 9 years. You will see that there are going to be, for some people, born, for example, in 1990, they've had a lot of Chiron transits only in 30 years. And some of them had a lot of Chiron transits by the time they're 15 years old, because Chiron's just whipping through the signs. So you want to study the orbit, particularly of Chiron. Of all the points described here, Chiron is going to be the most irregular because of the very wide variance with the highly elliptical orbit between whether it's in Libra for 18 months and Aries for 9 years. It's a big difference, right? It's like a 5-6-fold difference. When we come to Pluto, I'll mention something also. So you want to study the Chiron cycle and know how long it goes through each sign. And if you're working with someone on their Chiron transits, you'll start to notice. And by the your 10th client, 10th test subject, whatever, you'll start to see that it's easier to spot, and that you know that Chiron is picking up speed when it's in Taurus. And when it's in Pisces, it's slowing down. It's going to be like 7.5 years in Pisces and 9 years in Aries and then 7.5 years in Taurus. And then it's going to go quicker and quicker. And this is part of the slow, patient, midnight oil burning, quill pen in your hand, ephemeris open on the desk, patient, very much unlike contemporary life. Astrology is an experience of anti-environment. With something like Neptune, this has a fairly long orbit, something like 160 years or more. Really, the key life transit in question is the Neptune square. And the way things are working out now is that people have a lot of transits in their late 30s and early 40s. And so these can sometimes take some time to distinguish, between the transits and the phases of the transits, and particularly if Chiron jumps into the mix. Someone born in 1980 will be having their Neptune square at age 40 in 2020. Pluto is similar, but it's a slightly different case, in that we have recently passed the Pluto perihelion. Now, Pluto is a little bit centaurish in that it crosses an orbit. It crosses the orbit of Neptune, and it's elliptical. It's got and it's inclined to the ecliptic. Pluto is an unusual point, and it's partly why a bunch of foolish astronomers kicked it out of the planet club without having ever seen a picture of it, much less having actually walked around there. They didn't even have a picture in 2006 when they demoted it to dwarf planet, which is completely ridiculous. But in any event, it is very much a minor planet in that it has all these behavior patterns of the highly elliptical orbit, the inclination to the ecliptic, the variance in speed. So, for example, Pluto moved through Scorpio in like 12 or 13 years and similar through Sagittarius. Check the ephemeris, look this up. If we go to Taurus, it can take 20 years to go through Taurus, which means that we are accustomed to having our Pluto square in our mid-30s, whereas people born in other eras had their Pluto square at age 60. So that's really quite a difference. And it's possible to notice that Pluto is slowing down now. In other words, taking longer to go through a sign than it did, for example, when I began studying astrology with Pluto and Scorpio. It moved much more quickly, and now it is slowing down. And what we learn is that someone who was born in 1980 is having their Pluto square right now. And of course, that's compounded by Saturn and Eris all being in the picture. So study these charts and make your own up, and don't be afraid to make very simplistic charts like this. I think that your best friend as an astrology student, which I took me a while to figure this out, is a blank wheel that you sketch out your theories and you sketch out your observations. I just use Sharpies, or you can use pencil, or whatever you want to use, and fill your notebook with diagrams. And you don't have to cast the whole chart. That's not the point. The point is to be working in an astrological frame of reference. Start by using whole sign houses. Don't worry about the houses straight away. Just start by having a rough sketch of the neighborhood where you can put in three planets and study the pattern that they make, and gradually you'll draw up more and more sophisticated charts. And I believe that it is helpful to print out your charts. I know we need to save paper, but printing out charts is not that much paper. And take full possession of your charts. Take full ownership of them. And put your mark, your notes, your thoughts, your extra planets in the chart. Don't be boxed in by whatever Astrodienst or IO Edition delivered to you. Take ownership, especially of your chart. And to that end, Jocelyn down in Tennessee sends a lot of chart kits out. And we've now got the advanced astrology set, which is a binder with your charts and lots of things I've written and sample charts and resources. As I'm scanning through in my mind what's in there, there's like a lot of layers to this. But if you take a gentle approach to astrology and just focus on what was happening, right? What is happening? And contextualize it through life, you will start to get interesting insights and observations coming from your work. We have a few minutes left. Any thoughts or questions? I can't believe there's none. But perhaps. My dad is a professor. He says the same thing happens in his class. Nobody wants to raise their hand and speak, but I would encourage you to do that. So we have two volunteers, Gene and Joshua. Let's take Gene, and welcome to the conference. Come on, little mute button. Come on. Okay. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi, Gene in Michigan.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What is on your mind?
Well, I have a lot of transits going on right now. I think what I think is really useful and I really appreciate is I believe bringing people to their own wisdom about whatever it is. You know, here's your tools. Here it is. What you have the wisdom, and unfold it however it works for you. Mm-hmm. So I think you asked one of the questions like, noticing certain things. I'm a hairdresser and an artist, so I have a lot of people who sit in the chair, you know, and I really, really talk a lot. I do speak a lot to people. I mean, I've studied astrology on and off for about 30 years. I have more than a working knowledge of it, but I play with it. I look at patterns and things that pop out, right? Those are the things that are elemental things. Those are things that, because it's a conversation, astrology is a conversation of
yes.
Planets and elements and houses. And so when I have looked at many, many charts, because mostly it's just I'm curious and I'm very nosy. But I'm a double Capricorn, so Saturn's a big, you know, a big one in my chart, and plus I make it my friend. But I do ask people about ages with their children. Oh, my kid is this and my kid is that. I guess my point is I'm just sort of saying that I have really noticed the truth of astrology through the experience of Saturn from my own personal experience and through the dialogues I've had with people in the different points in their life and their children's lives. And how incredibly dynamic that is, and also with my little bit of wisdom in reminding them that this is a transition for, you know, all of us when we have to, you know, what do you profess to be in life? You know, Saturn says, well, who the hell are you? What are you doing? What do you profess to be? And I mean, those are some of my terminologies. But I really have noticed the power of that. And right now, Saturn and Pluto are both sitting on top of my sun. I have a 23-degree Capricornian sun. And so that's been very dynamic and deepening. And, boy, it's been sort of slam-dunking me. So I have a real, you know, feeling all that, you know?
Yep.
So mostly I'm not so much asking a question. I guess it's sort of just sort of speaking to what I notice.
Hairdresser's chair is a very good place to learn astrology.
Oh, my God, you have no idea.
My friend Dominic has an utterly tattered copy of the only astrology book you'll ever need right in his hairdressing stand. And able to use those crazy tables and look up everyone's rising sign. So he's basically been doing the same thing, sitting there educating himself about astrology while being like the neighborhood, you know, hairdresser therapist. So thank you for that thought. I've got two more hands up, and I hope to see you on the email list in next week.
You bet. Thanks.
All right. Little slightly clumsy HTML display. Hey there, Joshua. What is on your mind?
Hey, Eric. I was wondering about the differences between Chiron transit and Saturn, particularly. One thing I had was my Chiron upper square and Saturn return was so close together that it almost felt like one thing that's kind of gone on.
Yeah.
And so I guess differentiating the two.
Right. Well, one thing about Chiron transits is that they are some of the most wildly diverse transit experiences you'll ever hear. So there is really no way to, in my opinion, to predict a Chiron transit. Chiron's going to take on a lot of colors of the environment and of history, but it has a Saturnian side, right? One of the old theories of Chiron is that it wanders between the orbits of Saturn and Uranus.
And so it has
a Uranian facet and it has a Saturnian facet. So, you know, when we look more closely at your chart, it'll be a little easier to see this, but Chiron's going to be working a certain territory, and Saturn is going to be working a certain territory, and you can start to weave in the interplay between those two territories, both in the diagram and also thematically in your life. You know, Saturn transits can really move things along. You know, people think Saturn is like the wet blanket and everything is... everything is stuck, man. There are times when Saturn is like a catapult, where it can move the unmovable object. Like it's the thing that can, you know, it's like secret elixir from the formulas of Aleister Crowley that can move the unmovable. And there are times when Chiron can seem very similar to Saturn, or it can seem like it's just jolting someone. You know, so.
Yeah.
Part of how you get the sensitivity in handling the multiple transits is you have to listen to a lot of people's transit experiences and explore them in an open-minded way. And also, you've got two cycles to track, right? You can, for example, against your own chart, you can track the Chiron cycle as its own discrete thing.
Yeah.
And then assess where you are in that particular story today. Then you can throw that out and then track the Saturn cycle as its own discrete thing and look at where you are in the Saturn cycle today. Then you can, it's kind of like syncopation in music. You know, you play the left hand, you play the right hand, then you put them together and see what that's, you know, what that's about. And, you know, for shits and giggles, you might look at Uranus transits also because there's that Uranian element of Chiron. This takes a lot of imagination, right? I know that it's presented to us as being like bookish and what's in the book is right and all this stuff. But the thing is, to do astrology well, you have to have a an imagination and some discipline, both in your imagination.
It's definitely the,
right? Like, it's like art. You know, you can't, you know, I mean, there are people who can throw the ink on the page. It looks fantastic. People can spill the ink on the desk. It looks fantastic. But generally, it's a combination of discipline and imagination that gets result in art and music and astrology, which is very artful and musical. It's much less technical than people make it out to be.
You definitely have to sit down and draw every day.
Well, and that's true of astrology too, that it really helps to just do something with astrology every day, including if you just look on the New York Post website and look up your horoscope and try to figure out why she said that.
Yeah.
That's how I learned astrology, like from the beginning, is I just read the New York Post horoscope and finally couldn't stand it anymore. I'm like, how the fuck is he doing this? And so for fun, just look at, you know, if you only have 5 minutes to study astrology that day, go to the New York Post, look up Sally Brompton, who's one of the best mundane astrologers in the world. And whether you like what she said or not, or agree with it or not, just ask her, just look at the ephemeris for a second and, ask yourself why she said this. And, you might not figure it out till after lunch, but, you're still thinking astrologically on one puzzle. All right. So I'll talk to you more soon. We're getting near the end here. Let's bring Andrea Finn into the conversation. Good evening.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Excellent, Andrea. How can I help you tonight?
I have the same question as the previous one, the connection between Saturn and Chiron. So you basically answered that, but I thought of something else instead to ask you. So I'm a Taurus sun, and I have Libra on the ascendant. So Venus is really important to me, obviously. So how would I bring that into key life transits? Would I be looking at Venus conjunct some of these outer planets to kind of give me a little bit more guidance in certain aspects, or is that really not something I should be doing?
Well, I think it's worth looking at. The way that I've defined key life transits are the transits of outer planets that tend to happen to the same people at around born around the same age at around the same time. Whereas other transits might just be Pluto conjunct Venus. Right, that can happen at any age to any person born in any era of history, right? So everyone with Venus in Capricorn now is having Pluto conjunct Venus. Whereas you have to be 29 to have your Saturn return. You have to be 50 to have your Chiron return. So by key life transits, I'm talking about the ones that influence a cohort. A cohort group, and then there are all the other kinds of transits that happen. If you're studying transits, I would focus on outer planets, though.
Okay.
Right, because they're slower, they're more distinct, they're more defined, they're more. You know, it's going to be easier to pick out the distinction. And then, like, sure, if you have Venus crossing your ascendant, notice what happens. I mean, that happens once a year. Now, Venus retrograde conjunct your ascendant is another story, because that's an unusual event, right? That's going to have some distinction to it, right? Mm-hmm. So for the purposes of legibility, pick something a little odd. And then you observe the rest of the time also. Am I making sense here?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Thanks.
You want saliency. You know, you want to study things that stand out. And then you also have a track where you're just looking at the most absolutely ordinary things. I mean, I like to think I cast fewer charts now than I did, and I try to not chart everything. Something really has to get my attention. Look, this helicopter landing on the roof is interesting, right? Guy ditches a helicopter on the roof of a skyscraper. That's going to be an interesting chart. And that's called mundane astrology. And I would encourage everyone to immerse yourself in mundane events. Anything you see with a time given, cast the chart. And you'll start to get a feeling for the way the picture of reality matches the picture in the chart, which is all you're really doing when you're reading astrology. You're seeing correspondences, and then ideas jump out. Doesn't matter what kind of chart. Was that helpful? Are you there?
Yep, it sure was.
Okay, wonderful.
Yep, thank you, Eric.
Yep, Andrea. So seeing no other questions, let's wrap up for the night. I would encourage you to use the email list so we can talk about things. And I know email groups are a bit of a thing of the past. Everything's on Facebook. I happen to like email lists because it's all there. It's on your computer, and you can print it. You can study the thread, they'll all be conducted under the email address astroclass@planetwaves.net. And so we have one more meeting of this class next week. And for those who want to, you know, do deeper long-term study, I would be happy to help you with that in whatever context I can. And there's others at Planet Waves who can do that as well. So listen, thank you for taking part. I'm going to send around the notes I was using. They won't match exactly to what I said, but at least you'll have kind of a sketched out article that could easily be made into a much more elaborate article, and then I will get my version of this recording onto the internet as soon as I can. All right, anyone else with anything to say, just shoot me an email by list or personally, and thank you. All right, screenshot of the screen, and bye for now.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.